our understanding of operational carbon as being really important is still sound, but we now understand really just how impactful the development cycle is for carbon emissions and the importance of seeing both of those, particularly from a development perspective. That visibility from both the science aspect and what developers and contractors need to understand their impacts, that's really grown. In the past, developers and contractors maybe wouldn't have been asked those questions, but that's now part of their impacts on climate change.
Welcome back to Sustainability Street, our podcast on the intersection of commercial real estate and the world we live in. I'm your host, Therese Fitzgerald. For this episode, I interviewed Brianna Wheeler, Director of Operations for BREEAM USA. Wheeler was my guest 2 years ago, and I was happy to have her back to talk about BREEAM's impressive growth. The number of BREEAM certified assets across North America grew by 96% last year and 160% the year before. We also talked about the new version of BREEAM due out this year and her aspirations for U.S. sustainability. I hope you enjoyed the interview. After you listen, don't forget to rate and review Sustainability Street on Apple Podcasts. Hi, Brianna. Thanks for being an encore guest on Sustainability Street.
Thank you.
Take us inside BREEAM's growth.
It's been a fantastic past year for us. We've been really excited to see the growth. So a couple of things that have been driving it. One is BREEAM's applicability in all different asset types. So we're really seeing growth in segments of the real estate market that traditionally hasn't had a credible or valuable or value additive approach to certification, such as self-storage, for example. Certification's really been just one of those value points, though. A lot of what's driving this, I think, is BREEAM's ability to inform a pathway to best practice for so many different asset types. So we really, you know, kind of expanded the scope of building types that you're seeing sustainability being thought about and addressed in. And I think one of the other reasons why BREEAM's growing so much is really our longstanding inclusion of carbon emissions as the way in which we measure and recognize building performance. So companies are being asked by their investors and regulators to report on carbon emissions, and they're also being measured on how they drive those emissions down. So it absolutely makes sense for them to use a rating system that aligns completely with those requirements while providing data verification and recognizing their performance. So those are probably the two key drivers. I mean, I think with the expansion, what we're seeing is sustainability moving outside of that kind of shiny urban core office building market into the broader areas. And it's really bringing real estate sustainability into, say, suburban and rural communities and to blue-collar workplaces that it wasn't seen before, right? And really looking at this as we need all workplaces, we need all building types to be part of this. How are we going to help everybody move forward? So in 2023, we had four states achieve their first certifications. So Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Tennessee. And these states, plus those with significant growth that we showed, are really down to how goods in our economy move. So we saw a huge growth in industrial. It was phenomenal for that. But that pattern that you can see, it's really where people are living and working and where the economy moves. And it's really the decarbonization of the economy in action. You know, buildings are an important part of that process, and we're really seeing BREEAM being part of supporting that transition.
That's really impressive. And you're getting ready to unveil version 7?
Yeah.
And it's highly anticipated, I think, because of the embodied carbon aspects of it. Tell us about what's driving that, and then tell us about some of the key changes and updates.
Sure. So when BREEAM launched in 1990, the science was showing the threat of climate change, and we knew that carbon emissions were key to understanding those building impacts and how it contributed. But really, we were focused on operational carbon. We thought about how buildings were using energy. It was a really easy way, I think, of thinking about it, although anybody in this space will say, is this easy? Mm-hmm. Not really. You know, at that time when we launched, you know, the effects of climate change were not being seen, and certainly not on the scale that we've seen or experienced over the last decade. So fast forward 34 years to today, you know, our understanding of operational carbon as being really important is still sound, but we now understand really just how impactful the development cycle is for carbon emissions, mm-hmm. and the importance of seeing both of those, particularly from a development perspective, that visibility from both the science aspect and what developers and contractors need to understand their impacts, that's really grown. Right. In the past, developers and contractors maybe wouldn't have been asked those questions, but that's now part of their impacts on climate change. So for those folks to be able to understand the emissions that they are creating that and measure them and report on them has really come to the fore. So version 7 is really about continuing our evolution from a standard that was the first to recognize that addressing carbon emissions specifically was the way to minimize or avoid climate change, to the standard that reflects that we're now entering a period where we not only need to transition to zero emissions from buildings, but also adapt to the way that our world is changing as a result of the impacts of climate change. So, you know, mitigation plus adaptation. So version 7 is going to update the science behind our approach to carbon and energy, and it's going to do this across all three of our standards for buildings. So new construction for ground-up development, in use, which is for the existing buildings, and refurbishment and fit out. So RFO is what we call it for short. So it's going to do a couple of key things. So first, it's going to enable consistent whole life carbon measurement for buildings across all of those standards. That consistency is really important because we want to think about this in a whole life perspective from the development all the way to the deconstruction of the building. It's also going to enable zero carbon performance tracking and to demonstrate if the building is on track for net zero carbon. And that's really important, even from the development phase, being able to predict and understand the carbon emissions that the building is predicted to generate over its lifetime, and then actually being able to measure that over that time and using RFO to actually provide interventions where necessary. Another aspect of this is going to be gathering data using metrics that are common with reporting frameworks. So we're seeing a real convergence now, I think, of standards around this, the metrics kind of coming together as more industry bodies and the industry itself works together to understand it. So we're looking to support that as well. And we're going to be introducing more challenging operational and embodied carbon benchmarks. So not just recognizing any kind of performance, right? Are you reporting? How does that translate through to carbon? But also being able to evaluate how good that performance is against those benchmarks. It really provides a context, right? Zero being the goal, but what does that actually mean from a journey perspective? Not all buildings are there. Most buildings aren't even close, right? So this is all about supporting that journey. And the final kind of bit, probably this one of the most exciting, is the recognition that fugitive refrigerants are part of the carbon picture. It's not just about energy usage. It's also about those fugitive refrigerants. So one of the big things on this is really, I think, from embodied carbon, you know, BREEAM's been a champion for life cycle assessment for a very long time. I think this is a big part of us helping to elevate that practice on a global scale to say we have to think about whole life carbon. LCA and the development side is how we do this.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. It's exciting.
So last month, the Department of Energy released a draft national definition for zero emissions buildings. What is BREEAM's take on that definition? And how does that definition compare to its own definition?
Okay. Well, the three components considered in that definition, highly energy efficient, free from on-site emissions for energy use, and powered solely from clean energy, are a great start conceptually. And most of the current definitions and wide use in the real estate world correspond. However, the devil's in the details. That's where we need to get to on that. So again, science has told us that the way we measure that impact is by carbon emissions. And that's not just been recognized by BREEAM, but also by the SBTI and the building performance standards that are regulating carbon emissions from existing buildings. And those are popping up in jurisdictions across the US. The real estate industry, though, has already had a lot of deep thinking going on this space. And so our hope is that we would have a convergence of these standards and a harmonization so that we're not working to different ends. So our goal is really putting in information about that, bringing in our view from a science perspective and looking to see if we can provide the harmonization or bring harmonization between what the real estate industry is doing, what investors are demanding of us, plus the science. And I think the DOE, that's part of it, right, is bringing together that science view as well.
It's supposed to provide a lot of clarity out there. Do you think it will?
Well, I think standardization to some degree is highly desirable, right? We hear that a lot in the marketplace. We just want one, but nobody ever really wants one. It's like, we want one, but we want ours, you know? So, and that's where we get divergent. So I think variability to some extent may be acceptable, but only where the definition is backed by science and there's a credible process that sits behind it. And I think we have some way to work together to converge on this. But as long as I think we're all working towards the same trajectory, I think we all pretty much want the same thing. But again, it's all in the detail of how we get there. So our encouragement for the DOE has been to consider what's already out there, how they are specifically seeing this as aligning with what's there. And if they're in disagreement, being clear about what they're in disagreement for so it contributes to the conversation.
That will be interesting to watch. Brianna. Resiliency or a lack of resiliency as it relates to investment risk is really top of mind for investors as extreme weather events multiply. How is BREEAM helping owners understand and mitigate weather-related risk?
So BREEAM's always been a sustainability standard rather than just green. So when we think about what a truly sustainable building looks like, we're talking about one that minimizes environmental impact, supports and protects human health, and also delivers financial viability, right? Or financial value over that long term. So for us, resilience fits very neatly under that umbrella of what do we mean? So natural hazard risk assessment and particularly flood risk assessment has long been a part of BREEAM because they're nothing new. So what we've seen is that climate change is really enhancing these risks, but not necessarily introducing new ones. So in 2020, we launched version 6 of the BREEAM in use standard, which for the first time introduced a resilience category, which elevated it to sit alongside energy, health and well-being, transport, and other environmental categories. So we were the first standard to do this in our fully published standard, fully going forward. We also expanded our approach. So not just to look at the natural hazard risk, but also to incorporate transition risk and social risk assessment aligning with the TCFD. That elevation really, I think, has been critical in thinking about resilience as a core perspective of what we mean by sustainability. So for physical risk, it's not just about the assessment, it's also about mitigation measures. So BREEAM recognizes it's not enough to just identify the risk. You have to manage it too, and even better, find opportunity. So our goal has been to not only encourage the assessment of that, but also the action to be taken to protect the asset's value and to think about how resilience and decarbonization go together. How do these things work? And really finding holistic solutions that hopefully do both those things.
That's a challenge. There's a lot of talk lately regarding what should be done with office buildings and other structures that have outlived their useful lives. Some of them can be converted and some of them cannot. How does BREEAM incentivize adaptive reuse so that outdated buildings can be resolved sustainably?
So our refurbishment and fit-out standard is really where this sits. So it's been structured to support any scale of renovation, building envelope and structure, including facade, roofs, and glazing, core systems, and even further, all the way down into interior design. So it really allows an approach based on the scope. And that encouragement and that structure was actually really designed very much with historic building renovation in mind. There's not only environmental benefits to keeping these buildings, but we recognize there is cultural and social benefits too, the character of communities. So whatever the scale of renovation, there's an opportunity for interventions that can reduce the construction impacts as well as improve on the operational performance. Again, carbon becomes very critical to this. You know, adaptive reuse could mean a reduced embodied carbon footprint. Note that that's could. It doesn't always, and that's why life cycle assessment is so important. That balanced holistic approach really is about, you know, evaluating the options, realistically understanding the true sustainability benefits, and transparently measuring real sustainability impact over that life cycle. So we see BREEAM as, you know, really providing, again, a framework for thinking about what is the scale of the renovation and encouraging the reuse of those buildings, but also thinking about realistically what that carbon impact is going to be.
What would a situation be where an adaptive reuse did not save carbon?
Well, there could be a situation where, for example, all the other changes that need to be made to the building to make it functional for the next purpose just simply could not be completed within the materials that are available or the data. There's a lot of different pieces that come with this. Like, and we have to go back to the core of what is the building's purpose? What value is it going to deliver? I mean, from a carbon perspective or from an environmental perspective, you might have one answer: save it all, save as much as possible, right? The less material we have to put back into the building, the better. But we also recognize that many buildings that are, you know, at the end of their life cycle are just simply not set up for what the future purpose. So again, when you look at the financial value piece, what is their purpose here? If they aren't going to deliver value, how do we manage that? Our goal would be to support the buildings that truly need to fully change, where, you know, from a carbon perspective, even if you save the carbon, it's not going to deliver on the value. You know, save the carbon that we have to invest in them in for those buildings, not the ones where it simply feels more expedient to just knock it down and rebuild.
Right.
Being thoughtful, I think, is part of it. And this is about the holistic balance, right? Being able to think through options. We have a lot of things to consider. Sometimes they conflict or they feel like they conflict. And ultimately, BREEAM's goal is to provide transparency on the outcome of those decisions, whatever they might be, and provide a way of kind of food for thought on how a certain decision might impact the broader sustainability impact.
Thanks for clarifying that. When we spoke 2 years ago, you said the vast majority of existing buildings are nowhere near where they need to be. Do you still think the U.S. commercial real estate industry is in the beginning stages of its sustainability journey?
You know, the first stage of recovery from anything is acknowledging the extent of the problem, right? And I think the real estate industry as a whole has come really far with the acknowledgement, particularly that climate change is happening and that asset value will be impacted in the medium to long term. So we see that with the increased pressure from investors asking how real estate companies are managing the risks. And we're seeing deals impacted by the perception of risk, which in some cases means they're not happening. We see this, you know, happening in the insurance markets around the U.S., the huge increase in premiums and the withdrawal of coverage in certain places. And we see this through regulation, whether that's making sure that the risks, deemed material will be disclosed. So that's what's coming through the Securities and Exchange Commission, or through city regulations, which are focused on driving down carbon emissions. And for cities, this is all about the fact that they're dealing with, you know, the direct effects of climate change. They're going to have to manage this in their communities. So I think this kind of confluence has brought action and movement in areas of the real estate world where there were none before. And it's certainly very encouraging. Definitely in a better place than we were when we first spoke about this.
Mm-hmm.
We're also seeing whole portfolio approaches. So for our purposes, where BREEAM is being used to benchmark performance across all assets within a portfolio and pursuing certification for all rather than just the best performers. So the value in disclosing risk and opportunity, I think, is being seen much clearer than it was in the past. And BREEAM offers a way to do that with all the assets and evaluate just how sustainable they are based on where they are today. The key thing, of course, though, is moving from acknowledgement to action. So investors, finance, insurance, they're all pointing now in the same direction. And we have maybe a decade, maybe a little bit more than the typical holding period of an investment made today, really to make the changes that are needed to protect the asset's value. So at this point, you know, the public commitments to net zero and the like are really only part of the story. Real estate companies now need to prove that they understand the extent of the risks and that they are in process developing plans to be delivered in a reasonable period of time to manage that risk. And the best of them are going to change this from a risk management fear-based approach to one in which they're identifying opportunities that will be value add. And we're seeing some companies doing that now, really turning this into a business opportunity. And the approach taken could say a lot about which companies are the best stewards of capital. So it's also worth noting that there are other topics, besides climate change that really need to be addressed. Health and well-being, resilience, social impact are all also critical issues. And companies have a lot to solve for. How are they going to do this for all these things? How are they going to bring in solutions that address all of that? That's the value add piece. But we're definitely seeing the green shoots are becoming definitely thicker on the ground. Maybe I'm taking this a little too far, but definitely better than where we were a couple of years ago.
Sounds like it. And how can we expect BREEAM USA to grow this year?
Well, we're expecting continued growth in industrial, retail, and multifamily. These are all sectors that have started on the sustainability journey more directly in the last 2 years. And there's a lot of buildings out there that still need help. So we're seeing a lot of that. And it's fantastic because that's kind of the building stock, right? When we look at the number of buildings, we're expecting a lot more there. And we're seeing the lessons learned from approaching sustainability, what works, what doesn't, really starting to spread in these sectors. Still a lot of buildings to go though. So I expect that's where we're going to see a lot of the growth.
I look forward to hearing about it. As you look ahead to the next few years, what would you like to see more of? Is it more commitments, more regulation, more transparency?
Action, I think. There's been a worrying focus on reporting over action. So more people focused on implementation is what we need, and maybe fewer on data reporting. I think as our reporting frameworks get more sophisticated, data gathering is a really important aspect of any company who's looking to tackle this, right? You can't make good business decisions without data. But there is a question we have to ask ourselves about how perfect does the data really need to be to act? I mean, we make big business decisions all the time without perfect data. In my view, at this point, trajectory matters more than precision. We can refine later. So I think a lot of the focus on the data has been around fear around compliance, needing to report and needing to feel very comfortable in what's being communicated to investors and other stakeholders. But we need to bottom that out as quickly as possible and start moving towards the action. And the commitments piece, for me, is not as important as seeing the action on the ground. A company that can put forward an informed action plan that addresses meaningful steps to decarbonization, so building efficiency first, maximizing on-site renewables, consideration of credible off-site renewable energy options, no unbundled RECs or offsets, that kind of thing, where they have an informed approach, for me, then a public commitment doesn't matter. Because I can see the trajectory, I can see where they're going from that. So I would encourage more of that, the real meat of it, beyond even just making those commitments. So we see our role here as kind of threefold. So provide the framework for understanding what's meaningful, using the science to do that, providing a process and tools that translate that data into business information so it's informed, and then providing the transparency on the sustainability impact and building performance that results from the decisions made. So all of that action, forward thinking is really the key thing, I think. We've got a lot of work ahead, and nobody who works in this industry, is, I think, underestimating the scale of the challenge, but we absolutely have the tools at hand. So we just got to get on and do it.
Brianna, one more question. For people who are interested in advancing their knowledge about this, is there anything that you're reading or listening to that you'd recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I attend a lot of conferences, lots of different things. I think Urban Land Institute is fantastic for research and reports that they put out in the thinking around these issues, the bigger picture. And, there's certain aspects, I think, if you want to dive into carbon, looking into the nuances around things like time of use and kind of the real down into the detail. I'm that person. I'm like, the 30,000 foot, but also down in the weeds. But I think it's important to kind of look at the research and reports around how around the world, carbon emissions in particular are being thought of or carbon management. We see a lot of commonality, and that's sometimes feels unusual, right? A lot of times when we, in real estate markets, there can be really distinct differences between how things are managed in the US versus Europe, but we're seeing a real convergence. And I think there's so much to be learned from others in the industry working in other parts to connect. That's why, you know, the having conversations and bringing together in committees and things are really helpful, because that's where we learn the most from. The thing I love about the sustainability world is that we're highly collaborative. We may work for organizations that are competitive in the real estate market mm-hmm. on some level, but our goal is kind of the same. We all need to get there. So there's a lot of collaboration that goes in that. So that's what I would recommend. Sorry, going back to the original thing. Okay. ULI research and reports has been really helpful. And I'm, yeah, deeply appreciative to the work that they do.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming to visit us again.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And thank you, listeners, for joining me on Sustainability Street. If you have any questions about this episode or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out to me at therese.fitzgerald@cpe-mhn.com. And before you go, I want to tell you about an opportunity. The CPE Executive Council is a group of industry leaders who exchange ideas about trending real estate concerns, and those discussions are later posted on our website. If you're interested in joining the council, please contact Editor-in-Chief Jessica Fuhr at jessica.fuhr@cpe-mhn.com. Bye for now.